Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting me this week, we've got William Miller.
How you doing, Blake Buck?
Doing good. Good to finally have you back, sir, after an absence.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I hope you guys use the soundboard, because that makes me sound so good.
We've also got Justin Fick of... I keep wanting to say of Kill Monty Van. That's like years ago, your fame.
That's ancient history now.
That was weeks ago.
Justin Fick of Freeverse fame. What's up, dude?
Or you could say Laserface Jones fame.
That's true.
Laserface Jones is the new Kill Monty.
Dude, we've got so much news out there. Like, this week is just like bursting. You know, some weeks we got nothing. Other weeks we're just bursting at the seams. So let's go ahead and get started. This is your best damn podcast ever for Wednesday, March 23rd, 2011.
All right, so we had PAX this last weekend. That's why I was absent the last show. I had to get ready to go to PAX. William Miller was there. It was a lot of fun. I was only there the first day, so on Friday. I had to come back Saturday. PAX was awesome. Over 65,000 people attended PAX. That makes it the largest PAX, bigger than PAX Prime on the West Coast.
Nice.
What about, how does that compare to E3, though? That's still probably nothing.
I have no idea. I don't know what the numbers on E3 are. If anybody can figure that out, let us know. But this thing was big. I was at the Boston Convention Center. Boston drivers suck. just putting that out there. Anyway, I saw a lot of really cool stuff, but the coolest part of this was getting to show off the game I've been working on. Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning was one of the first things to be shown off at the convention. We showed it off to about 600 people. We had to turn people away because there were so many people that wanted to see it. One of the big exhibition halls was filled up with folks trying to see our game. We played it for like 45 minutes for them and took questions, and it was just great. So if you guys see anything about it out there, you know, check it out. It's pretty cool. There's a thread about it in the forum if you want to see screenshots and stuff.
Can I ask a quick question? Since this happened, I've been trying to find some of this video. I haven't really seen much like video footage or anything from this event. Is it out there yet, or is it still like under NDA wrap kind of thing?
Unfortunately, it's not. There were a couple like bootleg videos snuck out of the theater. Mm-hmm. I think there was one on YouTube. There were two on YouTube pretty recently, but those I think are taken down by now.
Mm.
It's unfortunate, but I think we're going to release some kind of gameplay thing soon-ish, but I don't know.
Now, I mean, I don't know much about the gaming industry, but it seems like you got a game. I want to see it. I still hadn't seen much. William Miller, I kept thinking I was going to see it after this PAX, and I still don't see it. Show it to me, baby.
Well, Blake Buck, I mean, you got to control the hype, right? We're still, you know, we're going to release the game next year. We're not going to get the hype train going too early.
Mm.
You know, I know how you hate games with huge hype way too early, and that's what we're trying to avoid. So we're, you know, controlling the exposure. We're going to build some kind of word of mouth stuff and get the core fan base excited. We're showing it in London pretty soon. They play a lot of RPGs over there in Europe. So, you know, I think it's a smart thing to do.
There's a balancing act though between hide that power and I see none of your power. Where is the power?
Well, like I said, you know, we released a lot more screenshots from the demo. And then there's descriptions of the playthrough out there, but you know, it's pre-alpha. This is the software. It shows great, and I would really like to see it out there because it's just a really cool game to look at. But you know, I guess those marketing guys know what they're doing. I mean, they sold Dragon Age, right? So
William Miller, now that the cat's out of the bag, we gotta know. So Miller Game versus the Skyrim job. What do you think?
You know, I actually really like those guys down at Bethesda. We have a lot of the ex-Bethesda people working on our game. But I saw that Skyrim job trailer. I want to play that.
Dude.
That tape looked good.
Dude, are you kidding me? That game looks so fucking lame. I don't get why Skyrim has all this, like, endless excitement behind it. Explain this to me. It looks the fucking same as Oblivion. The exact fucking same.
You know what I think it was, Blake? I think it was the soaring choral music that accompanied the gameplay footage. I think that's what really got me. Like, exactly. That has tricked me. Like, that's going to be a day one purchase for me just because of that.
Yeah, like, well, you know what choral music in trailers does for Justin Fick? They call that a class 5 chub.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no! I think Japan just had one of those a few weeks ago.
I don't think that's technically a chub.
we'll get to Japan a little while later in the show here, but anyway, PAX was awesome. The demo went great. Saw a lot of really cool games on the show floor. I saw Fez. I don't know if you guys have been seeing things about that. It's just
Speaking of Class 5 Chub, I want to play that game so bad.
Class 5 Chub. That's definitely Class 5 Chub.
What is this? I have no idea what this is.
So imagine an 8-bit style sort of indie game looking game, right? But it's all 3D, okay? So you play in 2D and then you can rotate the game to other like angles so that you can do different kinds of platforming. It's kind of hard to explain, but very easy.
It sounds like that game. What's that game called? It was on PSP, Crush.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of like that.
It's a lot like that in the sense that you're manipulating the perspective in a weird way to navigate. It's a puzzle platformer like
or,
that.
Or there was another one out like that on PSP too. Not Persona. You guys remember what I'm talking about? Maybe.
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. No, but I know what you're talking about. Perspective where you kind of shift and like now just a ramp becomes a stairwell
exactly.
kind of thing.
It's sort of like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Echochrome.
Echochrome. That's
Echochrome.
So anyway,
that's
Fez has been in development by Polytron, this little indie studio. I think it's like one or two dudes doing this on, I think it's XBLA targeted.
It's kind of an all-star lineup. Like if you look at it, it's got, I've never played anything from, I guess the main artist, designer, the guy, Phil Fish, I never played anything by him, but all his shit looks hot. It has animation by Paul Robertson, who did all those crazy, Pirate Baby, Street Fight, Cabana, 5 Million, and Kings of Power. And he
Wait,
did
what?
The
I'm sorry.
What is it? The Scott Pilgrim game. All the animations for Scott Pilgrim for the PSN.
Oh, dude, that was
X-Block.
Dude, that was a damn fine
and,
game.
Adam Saltzman, who did
Cannibalt.
Yep.
Hey, you know, do we ever talk about that movie? Because I don't think we were doing the podcast then, where we were kind of lax in doing the podcast. Dude, that good game, good movie. I like both
too.
Of those,
I
Scott
too.
Pilgrim. I didn't think
totally,
I'd like...
Yeah, totally with you.
When I saw the trailers of the movie, I was like, this is going to be retarded. Really good. I stand corrected.
I got to call out some other games. One that I found on the show floor called Rascals was really good.
Oh, dude, Rascals is already out, and that game's awesome.
Oh, man. Justin Perez, one of my other designers, at Big Huge, and I played this game probably 3 or 4 times on the floor. We had to come back and play it because it's so much.
Wait, was it just regular Rascals? Because that's already out.
It's like, I'll describe the game for you, and you can tell me if that's what it is. Because they could have been here promoting, or been at PAX promoting it. Pretty much what it is, it's a multiplayer game. You play like up to four player split screen. And imagine a platformer that's filled with a bunch of Tetris blocks, okay? Mm-hmm. And you got to shoot the Tetris blocks and race to the bottom of the level. So it's a race to get down to the bottom. And, you know, you get all these power-ups, and you can kind of grief each other a little bit. And it was super fun. We tore up some, 13-year-olds.
Yeah. That game's made by Half Brick, who also did Fruit Ninja on iPhone. And
it came out,
I guess, about 2 or 3 months ago. Fantastic game. It is brutal as hell in multiplayer. Like, it's from that Bomberman, like, oh my God, I'm going to murder you now in real life.
Yeah, it's great. And they had some killer merchandise at their booth. I was remiss for not picking some up. But
just to give it a mini judgment, one thing I don't like about that game, thumbs up, but dude, single player, that game, so hard. So hard. Why did it's like unlike all the Rascals. Yeah, if I was Justin Fick, I could do that, but I can't.
I also saw Bastion. I think I mentioned this game on the podcast a little while ago. It's sort of a Diablo clone, but with this really cool hand painted style. If you haven't seen Bastion, check it out. It's really cool looking. I didn't get a chance to play it. There was always somebody at the stations playing it when I went to see it on the floor, but. Very, very cool looking game. I saw a couple cool board games, one of which was Civilization, the board game, which I'd actually never seen before. I don't think Firaxis had much to do with it, but it looked real fun. I'm going to have to get that. It looked pretty cool.
No, you know, it's Settlers of Catan. That's about as far as I can go. That's basically, it's like Civilization Light. I don't need them rules.
Oh my God. So they have a bunch of booths on the floor with like board games and stuff. And probably 60% of every booth is some kind of Settlers of Catan variation. Like they had this one, right? That's just America. that's been overlaid with those Settlers of Catan hexes. Like, are you kidding me? I don't know if I want to play that or not. That looks dumb to me. Mm. But anyway, yes, I saw so much Settlers of Catan. I'm kind of tired of it. And I saw they had like a jam space set up, sort of a mini mag fest. That's the thing that our friend Dom runs.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, did you get to see any of the chiptune concerts there?
I saw, actually, there were some guys like walking around. They were from the Boston area. They were walking around with like a mini amplifier clipped to their belt playing chiptunes that they had written. It was very cool. I didn't get to see a lot of the jam space stuff. I think the Proto Men were there. Maybe Metroid Metal was there. I'm not entirely sure. But I did see Ryan Meyer. That was pretty cool. He's been on the show before.
I figured he was dead. What's happening with him?
He's still in school. He's at the University of Michigan, you know, doing games and stuff, learning how to code, I guess. Hmm. So he's doing well. Dom's doing well. Dom actually works at Big Huge now, which is awesome. So it was good to see him there. Some things William Miller did not like about PAX. Number one, Duke Nukem. That game sucks.
Whoa.
Okay, I gotta say something here, too. I'm gonna confess it right now. I don't give a fuck about Duke Nukem Forever.
What the fuck is this? How dare you turn your back on the Duke after 10 years?
I turned my back on the Duke a long time ago.
How dare you?
So I got to play the game, and it was okay. It just didn't feel like... I guess I can't say it sucks.
Duke Nukem is about the personality. It's about the over-the-top humor and personality. As long as that is preserved, regardless of the gameplay, I will be behind this game. And to me, it seems like that's there. At the booth, I saw us in a picture, there's a giant chandelier, like, at their booth. That's what that game is about. It's about the personality.
I'll get to that. So, the gameplay was all right. It's pretty standard shooter stuff. The booth was really loud, so I didn't get to hear a lot of the Duke's dialogue. The headphones are kind of shitty. I didn't get to hear a lot of Duke's dialogue, but it was okay. I mean, I just, you know, I expected the world because the booth. Oh, my God. So one of the rules at PAX East this year was no booth babes because it is, quote, not in the spirit of PAX, much to my dismay. However, the Duke Nukem booth circumvented this regulation liberally. So they had like this huge opulent, like Rococo style, you know, booth thing set up. It looked like some, you know, Russian oil baron's house, this massive chandelier in the middle. And below the chandelier is a throne with these two booth babes flanking it. And so you wait in line for the throne. You get to sit in there like the Duke would, and they'll like rub all on you while they take a picture of you. It was the funniest shit I've ever seen. Because you could look across the show floor. I don't even... there was no sign. Nothing. You knew that was the Duke over there. Like, it was very well done. Like, the presentation was very well done.
That's what Duke Nukem is all about, okay? Because if you look at the original Duke Nukem, not an amazing... I mean, the game was all right, but it was all about the personality, the over-the-top humor, and as long as they preserve that, it's going to be true to the series.
I mean, to me, Duke Nukem is like Andrew Dice Clay making a comeback. No, I'm serious. Like he was like this really vile, vulgar, awesome, you know, personality way back in the day, and then disappeared. And then when he comes back, like, you know, like for instance, Andrew Dice Clay, there are more vulgar comedians than Andrew Dice Clay now. There are people that put him to shame.
Right.
You know, so there are bloodier games. There are more vulgar games. I can get games with more blood, more tits. You know, it's like Duke Nukem is just sort of like, okay.
No, it was, it's the humor, dude. It's the games. No game has embraced the humor of the super macho hero near as much as Duke Nukem did back then and is doing now. That's what that game is about.
I think Fick's right. I think we've talked about this same sentiment on the show before. Duke Nukem's got a lot to live up to. I mean, he's got to live up to his own legacy. Look what he spawned. You know, you can go out, like Fick said, and buy games that are just... they're twice as ridiculous and boundary-pushing as that
one. I disagree. Not maybe in terms of the number of... again, the game is not about the blood. It's not about the women. It's about the over-the-top macho humor. And you won't find that in... name one other game that has that.
I would argue that Bulletstorm is a little more way out there than Duke.
Okay, all right. I'll give you that. Maybe Bulletstorm, maybe, but...
how about Painkiller?
Painkiller, no. Painkiller had very little. Painkiller actually
or
had...
Serious Sam, or... I mean,
Serious Sam basically is Duke Nukem. I mean, he's a carbon copy character. But even though they don't have a game out, I mean, not really. They hadn't put a game out, a real game out.
Oh, we'll get to Series Sam in a little bit. I got some news about that. Anyway, so I also saw 3DS.
What's your judgment on that so far?
So it works, right? It is 3D in my eyeball.
Have you actually seen the 3D?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I have. It's pretty cool. I have to admit, it's pretty cool. It's a little finicky. Like if you the viewing angle is unforgiving. You have to be looking at it straight on to get the 3D effect. The screen is a little strange. It's got this strange what is it called? Anatropic. What's that term, Justin Fick?
Hologram.
Anyway, it's a little weird. You know, I don't know. I'm gonna give it a. I can't give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. I played a little bit of.
I got three words for you. 3 hour battery life. That's four words. It doesn't matter because that's bullshit.
Yeah, that's like a quarter of what my DS Lite was.
Plus, it feels big. It feels like I'm holding a brick. I don't like that.
I'm saying Nintendo has just ruined this launch. And what is it? Is it like April 1st? Or is it next week? It's either next week or the week after. But thumbs down. I'm telling you, man. 3DS. Wait for second rev of it.
And I waited in line for quite a while to see that. And I wasn't impressed. Like, I would have just not... If I had known that that was what I was going to see, I would have definitely not waited in line for it. And then I get home, and I get back to work, and somebody puts one of them new iPads in my hand.
Oh.
And... That's class 5 chub instantaneously. It's like, it just, the 3DS just didn't do it for me. Nintendo says, you know, they're still relevant against something like that. They're not.
Well, you forget, you are no longer in Nintendo's marketing demographic, though. I mean, the young professional, all of us are, okay, maybe Blake's not because he doesn't have a job, but he would be. And the point is that Nintendo is still marketing and has always traditionally marketed to the younger demographic. Younger demographic is not going to go buy an iPad. They're going to go buy the 250 DS with Pokemon on it.
Well, they might not buy an iPad, but they might buy an iPod Touch.
That's right. That's the same price point as the iPod Touch now. And the iPod Touch does so much more than that thing. So I just
Or even the iPhone. I mean, if you're signing with a service contract,
sure,
even cheaper.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I could see a parent getting their kid either one of those tapes. And if they had a choice, if I were a little kid, you know, and I didn't like Pokemans, I'd say, give me that fucking...
All kids like Pokemans.
Now, speaking of iPad, what I'm excited for, I don't know if they had any of this heat at PAX, and I don't know if you guys heard of it. It's called Sword and Sorcery EP.
Oh, that's definitely class 5.
That will probably be out by the time this show airs.
No shit.
But that looks fucking hot.
Is it coming out in the next couple days?
What is this?
It said there's like this audience calibration trailer they put out that gave a release date of around the vernal equinox. So a couple days from this recording.
So for those of you who don't know, this game is made by, what do they call themselves? It's like...
Super
Brothers, that's it. Thank you. Super Brothers.
What's the name of it?
It's Sword.
Sword and Sorcery EP.
Yeah. So the Super Brothers make, they do illustrations. Like, they have this really interesting sort of pixelated art style. They've done illustrations for print. They've done like animations and stuff. You would recognize it if you saw it. But they're making this really cool sort of traditional adventure game. It looks like it kind of plays like an old King's Quest or something. But it's really visually compelling. It's on the iPad, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, like everything about this game is just it. I don't know. It makes my nipples all a twitter.
I'm looking at this trailer.
Like, I'm excited for everything about this. Like, the music sounds amazing. Like, the animation, the art style looks amazing. The gameplay looks awesome. Like, it's yep. I mean, and like, there really hasn't been a good new adventure game in a long time.
So it's an adventure game or a platformer?
It's definitely an adventure game.
It seems to be much more like an adventure game, sort of like almost like a King's Quest or like a Loom or a Monkey Island or something.
Oh, dude, this looks hot. I'm watching the trailer. Yep. This looks hot.
So anyway, I think it's like one of the killer apps. I mean, I think that app could be a real killer app for that platform. I mean, not that the platform lacks them, because it certainly doesn't, but man, I'm just...
Now, who are the Super Brothers? Who are these people? What do they make?
They're sort of like, I guess animators would be my best guess. Like, I haven't seen any, they haven't made any games, but they've made a couple of, I guess like music videos, like they work pretty close with a musician from Canada. His name is Jim Guthrie, who's also doing the music for this game. So you can look them up on Vimeo and check out a couple of their music videos. And then the programming is done by Cappy Games, who
Critter Crunch. That game was good. You guys play that?
It was a good game. And then they also did. I don't think it's out yet. The Might and Magic Clash of Heroes, which looks cool. I mean, you know, it seems to be a very character based Might and Magic game.
Hmm. I've never gotten into Might and Magic. I just never got it,
dude. Might and Magic, Might and Magic 3 is one of my favorite games ever. It's one of the few games that can combine two radically different kinds of gameplay together. It's like a turn-based exploration code collecting
game. Like RTS.
Game.
I thought it was also kind of RTS.
Well, you got like a hero, right? And you explore the world, pick up all these codes. It's a real collection-focused game, the one half of it. And then the second half of it is sort of a turn-based tactical game. And they pull it off really, really well. I thought the third one did it the best. There's also like a base building component. You can like upgrade your castle and get new mans and stuff. It's really good. If you haven't gotten into it, I mean, Blake, you like Civilization, right? I mean, you probably really like this game if you just sit down for, you know, more than 2 seconds and play it.
Can't do that. I'm out hustling for money, son. You don't know my life.
You don't know my life.
it's not funny. Wayne Miller, anything else on PAX?
I was a little disappointed at the there were a lot of sweaty nerds. And I thought,
what about the now this is PAX, right? Was there a speech by Tycho and or Gabe?
Yeah, they did a panel. I didn't go to it. I didn't go to a lot of the panels because I was dealing with, you know, stuff for work or whatever, but they did a panel, and I don't even remember what it was about, honestly. I think it's like, you know, why it's so hard to make a video game comic book or something like that. I don't remember.
Hmm. Yeah. AKA our game was a horrible failure. And,
Hey now, you mean the RPG they did?
Financially, critically, it did not perform well.
I played it. I thought it was really good.
All right. Well, William Miller aside. Now, here's my question. If these two clowns on the internet with their little internet comic can make an expo, I mean, where's the best damn expo ever? That's what we need. Where the fuck is that?
We just haven't thought of it yet. Until now.
It's starting tomorrow. Pack your shit, y'all.
At Blake's house.
Blake doesn't have a house.
I don't. All right.
I love this. Now we can make fun of Blake for being fat and poor. This is a veritable renaissance for those of you on Blake Dumb, man.
There needs to be a new team, Blake Poor.
Well, there's no contention about that. I mean,
there's at least no debate.
Contention about, you know, there's some debate.
Yeah, I think for there to be a team, there needs to be a team Blake Rich.
Oh my god, I'm starting that, you know, mind over matter. Put it on my vision board, Blake Rich. Alright, so just to pick what you got for us.
Alright, so I've got my first news story is a bit of a mess, actually. So I don't know if you guys remember the Infinity Ward suit with the two heads being fired or quitting from Infinity Ward, right? Under Activision, and taking a bunch of people with them and all that nasty freaking lawsuits that ensued.
Right.
So I guess a quick recap, but Activision basically sued the both of them for breach of contract. And
both of who?
Sometime after that, they also tried to bring in EA into this lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Now, where EA comes in is Activision basically claimed that EA sort of conspired with these two developers, the heads of Infinity Ward, to quit and start an independent company.
I mean, that's totally true, though. I'm positive that's true.
So Activision named EA as defendant in that lawsuit, and is now claiming $400 million.
Ooh.
Well, that's a couple months ago. Now, you know, EA has tried to get that dismissed because they're like, hey, this is bullshit. This is a fucking publicity stunt. Fuck those guys. So, a judge has basically denied EA the motion to dismiss their Activision's $400 million claim against them. So this is getting really ugly.
So they denied the claim against them, so EA could still be in hot water with Activision?
So essentially what that means is EA is still in hot water now. They are still a defendant in this case.
But you know that's true. You know EA was like, hey, y'all want to work for us? Here's an unlimited supply of money. Here's all the money we've ever made.
I hear you drink.
So, I don't know, I mean...
clinking over there.
I mean, it does kind of seem like a money grab or something, but it also seems like, you know, why would you also go against the other biggest publisher out there, you know?
Well, so. You know, these are the two largest publishing companies in the gaming industry, and if they're going to have a dick measuring contest, then, you know, let them have it in court. You know, it seems silly to say, like, oh, EA had nothing to do with this. I mean, we all know that there was some ungodly figure offered to these guys to split from Activision. So, I don't know. I mean, I hate to see this, but at the same time, you know, Activision is world renowned for taking a franchise and just raping it into the ground, and you have to at least give some support to these guys for fighting the powers that be and trying to do something different.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know.
That said, the indie company that these guys started up, Respawn Entertainment is the name, is, you know, working with EA as their publisher. I mean, you know, right. On one hand, you could say, oh, yeah, EA totally stole them over. On the other hand, you know, you could just say, you know,
Activision, where else would they go
like
at that point?
A bunch of fucking dirty cocks, you know. Yeah. Just, where are you expecting us to go?
Right.
You know? So, I don't know.
Well, we'll see how this shakes out in the end.
The whole thing is messy as hell. It's ugly.
And even then, you know, as much as they're like, oh, these guys are the hottest asset in the gaming world right now, you know, they're just making the same game over and over again. I wasn't impressed with Modern Warfare 2 or Black Ops for that. I mean, they're fun games, but just didn't have the imagination that the original game had. And I don't know if it's worth.
I haven't really played any of these popular shooters since, and I don't even know if you could count this game among them, but since Halo Reach. I have not played any Modern Warfare since, you know, I played the first one, that was it. I haven't played
Modern Warfare or Halo Reach, good game.
You know, I haven't played Black Ops. Like, I just don't care.
Yeah, well, now that happens to me with a lot of games. Like, I was talking to a buddy of mine today. He was like, man, I got to play that new Metal Gear Solid. I've solided so many Metal Gears at this point. I just, there's nothing Konami can do to bring me back to Metal Gear. Just like with Zelda, you know, it's like, I've played so many Modern Warfare _ Duty Danger. I feel like I've moved on. I'd rather play Torchlight on Xbox, you know, a little rinky-dink game than another one of these Me Too shooters or whatever. Anyway, moving along, we've got the BAFTAs were last week. For those who don't know, what is it? The British Academy Video Game Awards. I think that it's like Film and Television Award.
Yeah,
I don't know.
The British Academy of Film and Television Arts.
So within that, they have a video game section. And all the winners were announced picking up awards for Action was Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Artistic Achievement God of War 3, Best Game Mass Effect 2, Family was Kinect Sports, which seems really weird because that game sucks dick. Oh, no, wait, no, I get it, because they're out of Liverpool, right? Oh, let's pick them. What, Rare is based out of Liverpool, right?
Oh, never mind, go ahead.
Gameplay Super Mario Galaxy 2, handheld was Cut the Rope? Really?
Dude, that game's fun.
I know that game's
fun,
but
game. Actually,
handheld
that
game
one,
of the year?
That won best, I believe, best mobile game at the GDC Developer Choice Awards.
Now, in my mind, even though Nintendo would argue this, handheld and mobile are different. I guess they're really not at this point, though.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. I guess that makes sense.
They're only different in price point. That's the only difference.
Best multiplayer: Need for Speed Hot Pursuit. Original music: Heavy Rain. Best social network game: My Empire. Sports was F1. I guess, what is F1? Is that Formula One? I guess 2010. Story: Heavy Rain. Strategy: Civilization 5. Technical achievement: Heavy Rain. Heavy Rain getting a lot here. You know, I hear that game's like $30 now, and it's supposedly really good. It's by those Indigo Prophecy guys. What's the name of that company?
Yeah, the plot kind of feeds into Indigo Prophecy.
Oh, really? They're like, connected?
Spoiler alert, they're connected, yeah.
You know, I never beat Indigo Prophecy, but a friend of mine told me that the end of that game is like Dragon Ball Z. Like, not, it's so removed from how it starts.
Yeah, it goes off the deep end. Definitely does.
And the game of the year was Call of Duty Black Ops. Notably absent was Red Dead Redemption because they did not, I guess, get their paperwork in on time.
Now, there was a little bit of controversy about this, and I think, Justifit, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they abstained from entering the BAFTAs because of the requirement that you be a member of whatever the guild is that hosts this thing.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything one way or the other, but I mean, that's, I wouldn't be surprised. That happens in the Academy Awards a lot. Like, movies don't get nominated because they are not part of the Academy.
Yeah, and I think that the entrance fee is only like $60. And I read an article about why this was so important to them, but I don't really remember. But it was over like the membership requirement.
I think if Cut the Rope can afford to get in, I think Red Dead Redemption could maybe.
No, it's not that they couldn't afford it. It's just that they conscientiously objected from entering because of some objection to the whole membership requirement. I don't exactly remember why, but that was the reason.
Anyway, speaking at the ceremony, British games industry, and I'm reading this word here, British games industry luminary Peter Molyneux was presented with a BAFTA fellowship for his illustrious career so far. These are not my words. He thanked everyone, saying, "I'm just an idiot that stands up and says, why don't you make a game about theme parks or dungeons?" If I had to pick one person that I hated more than like what's that, Bobby Kotick in the gaming industry, Peter Molyneux is gunning for second place.
Dude, you can't hate Peter Molyneux. He just shouldn't be in front of a camera. That's all. I mean, the guy's got good ideas. I mean, the Fable franchise
sure.
is real good.
Whoa! All right,
Dungeon Keeper is one of my favorite
Fable,
games.
Fable,
ever.
I think, shoots itself in the foot because it tries to be realistic, but it's like cheesily, like, oh hey, give your lover some sexin' button. Like, it's so cheesy and.
But at the same time, it does things that no other game has tried before.
I suppose.
Sure, it fails at it sometimes, but
yeah, I wouldn't call it really good, but it's I don't know. It was satisfying in its own little way. Like, if you don't take it as the be-all end-all
right.
RPG that Peter Molyneux kept saying it was, then it did what it did, all right, like, I can go knock some chick up and give her 10 babies and then kill
in
them
his
all.
In his defense, he did jokingly say at the award ceremony, "I can name at least 10 features in games that I just made up." Okay, you've got a few points back, Peter Molyneux. But what is he doing? What are they doing? Because they had Fable 3 that was kind of a critical flop. I don't know how it did sales wise.
Actually, I think they're working. They're still working on Milo.
Really? I thought that got no. I could have sworn that got.
I think
canned.
They've repurposed that into an adventure game. I think I read that somewhere. I don't know. Could be wrong. But
I hope not.
I think that they're working on that, and I'm sure they're working on another Fable. I mean,
all right. Well, William Miller, you got anything else, or was your pack seat all you had?
Let's see what William Miller's got here. I do. So, Serious Sam, we were talking about this a little earlier in the podcast. Serious Sam, one of my favorite games. I remember, I have fond memories of playing this game with Blake Buck back in high school. On two monitors, exactly. Now, like Blake Buck said, these guys have not put out another Serious Sam in quite a while.
I mean, well, in their defense, they had Serious Sam 2 at circa like 2004-ish. Maybe 2005 at the latest, but it's at least been 5 years since they've had a game.
It's been a while. It's been a while. So instead of just kind of sitting on their laurels, or, you know, they're probably doing something in that IP, but to get something going in the meantime before they release their next big thing, they have sort of given the IP away to three indie studios.
Now, wait, didn't we just talk about this last week, Justin Fick?
We did.
So you're a little out of the loop.
Okay, but did you talk about Serious Sam Double D?
Yes.
Well, goddammit.
Oh, we did.
Blake, I told you about this before we started the show.
I forgot that you weren't there when we talked. I thought you had new news about
this. Okay, well, anyway.
Well, just give us a recap of it, just so we can mention it.
Did we talk about the screenshot with the guns that are, like, stacked on top of each other?
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Okay, so the thing that caught William Miller's eye about this, I'll save the explanation about what the Serious Sam indie series is and all that, but... Serious Sam Double D, which is awesome because it's got two D's in it, and it is a 2D game. It's a 2D game, but they took a pretty common mechanic of 2D shooters. Like, you pick up a gun, you drop the gun you just had.
Right.
They took that, and they were like, that's dumb. We're going to take that out and put something awesome in. So instead of dropping the gun you already had, they just stack. and so the screenshot I saw on Kotaku today was just this, like, this gun rack that he had in front of him that was like almost twice his height.
Oh my God.
And it just looks so ridiculous. Hang on. I have the...
Yeah, send me a link or something. I need to see this.
Dude.
Oh no. Wait, I think I found it. Oh, dude.
Here, Justin Fick.
I like how there are just D's on each side. Here, send me two because I don't know specifically the one. I'm looking at the one that's the running guy.
There you go. And they're just like taped together as guns.
So now this is the weapon of choice, guys. Yeah.
Mommy's
best games.
Oh, well, I don't know. I don't know what weapon of choice. Mommy's best games. Okay. This is actually a really cool idea. I'm sure you guys covered this, but I really like the idea of, like, you know, a successful studio. They're working on stuff, but they like give their IP to a select few of, you know, talented indie studios. And it's like, you know, run with this, see what happens. I think that's pretty neat. And Double D looks amazing. So,
we talked about this last week, but I'm totally behind this movement of hey, here's our IP. You guys do what you want with it. It'll help promote us. We'll sell you. It seems like, you know, it would take a small developer to come up with this idea, but it doesn't seem, you know, it seems like you could do this on a much larger scale too. It seems like I don't know, Call of Duty could do something like this and have a lot of success with it.
Right, and also the franchise itself lends itself to this kind of thing. I mean, if you were to give away the Halo franchise or, like, the Dragon Age franchise, something like that, like, they would want to have all kinds of control over what you were doing with it and all this stuff, because the IP is really, you know, narrative sensitive and all that stuff. This is just like, it's just Serious Sam. The story, it doesn't matter. You know, the characters, they don't matter. As long as it's got Sirius and Sam in it, it's going to be all right. So, I don't know. This is cool.
And screaming headless dudes.
That's my favorite character of all time. All right, well, Justin Fick, what you got for us?
All right, so there's a possibility that the price of the Sony NGP has been leaked in a survey.
Ooh.
So, A Ubisoft survey went out that polled gamers about possible $250 and $350 price points for the standard and 3G equipped versions of their upcoming NGP. So it's kind of a little scary. This handheld's coming out for about the same price as a PS3.
Now, wait a minute, but at the same time, keep in mind that the PS3 came out at $599. Where's that will go down in history. But, I mean, I don't know. That seems $250. They're right at the price point with Nintendo. And $350 sounds like a lot, but, you know, if that's got some sort of insane hard drive or whatever it does, that seems fair enough, because technologically, I'm sure it will be a beast, and it will certainly be beyond what the 3DS is capable of. That's always been Sony's stance.
I mean, if Sony doesn't do what they always do and somehow fuck this launch up, you know, I can easily see Sony overtaking the 3DS with this one. But
again, I think the main competition, like we talked about before, it's going to be with iPhone and other mobile devices.
Yeah, the main competition isn't Nintendo anymore. In fact, Nintendo's kind of sinking their own ship just fine.
Yeah, just let Nintendo to themselves. Like, I saw Reggie Fils, you know, making a statement about, you know, Nintendo is recalibrating. I'm like, Reggie, I love you, but you're on a sinking ship. You got to find a new job, son.
Oh, so I have a Nintendo story. I went to New York recently, and
Didn't visit Justin Fick.
I did not visit Justin Fick, and I apologize, Justin Fick. I had a lot to do in a very short period of time. But anyway, I was walking around with Nikki downtown. We went to that Japanese bookstore that's like, I forget what cross street is, but big Japanese bookstore,
Manga.
Right? So I go downstairs, I got all this Japanese stuff. I go down there and I ask, like, William Miller's a big Go fan. I love playing Go. It's my favorite game of all time. So I was like, let me see your Go stones. And I know they got them because it's, you know, I see the board over there. I know you got some Go stones. So they bring out these, like, exquisite Go stones. And I was like, how much are these? And he's like, $400. I'm like, what?
Each.
Each. And then I asked him who makes it. He says, oh, Nintendo. What?
What?
Yeah.
What?
So Nintendo still makes their, you know, traditional card games and Go stones and all that shit too. Lest we forget, you know, they're not just a digital company.
No. Okay, the Hanafuda
for $400. Those Go stones must be made by Hattori fucking Hanzo.
They will beat any player regardless of skill level.
It must allow me to beat God at Go.
Yeah, what is it? If God, what? I can't remember the quote. It's in there somewhere.
Yeah, if God will play Go with you, God will be stoned.
But yeah, Nintendo does. I mean, don't they? What it was a Hanafuda cards they used to make back in the day, like back in the 60s and 70s.
That's how they started.
Yeah, they had some of them too. The little bitty cards.
Has anybody played that ever? Have you, William Miller? That seems up your alley.
No, I haven't played it.
All right, well, my story I got for you guys. So we talked about, me and Fick talked about this last week. It's out now, Homefront, the THQ. I'd almost say like THQ do or die time. They've sunk a lot of money into marketing and developing this game.
Oh, man, I tell you what.
It's made by the guys who did Frontlines Fuel of War, which was a good game, had bad marketing, you know, kind of a generic IP and never really got off the ground. They're sinking tons of money into this, though. So after they released the game, you know, all the reviews came out, and it has an average of 72 on Metacritic. Whoa. Right now, which is, whoa, which in the, basically in the gaming industry, if you're an 8 and or above, you're fine. If you're a 7 or below, you're dead. Which seems so stupid. There's only like three. We only use four numbers in the gaming industry: 10, 9, 8, 7, and not nothing even gets 10. So it's really like 9, 8, 7, and 6. So the reviews were not good for what's it called? Homefront.
What did people not like about it? Just out of curiosity.
You know, I haven't looked into it because it just came out, I think, yesterday, day before, but. We're not. I mean, aside from that, what I wanted to say is that their stock value after the review, after one day, went down 21% of its value.
Holy shit!
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
21%. Analysts have been quick to point out the drop on Metacritic. Oh man, yeah. So it has not. And 72 is not awful. That's not awful, but yeah, they're. They just got destroyed in terms of their share. So right after that, and in a last-ditch attempt to say, hey, maybe our game doesn't suck, it was announced that in North America alone, because they made this announcement very hastily yesterday before the international sales figures even came in North America, they sold 375,000 copies day one. That's pretty fucking good.
That's good.
That's pretty good for a new IP from a second tier developer with negative reviews. 375, not bad.
Now, most of those, I've read some material on this too, but most of those were from pre-order sales. This was the most pre-ordered game in THQ's history.
Hmm.
And so I think a lot of it was like that really good, they had some really good marketing for this game. Like they set up the fake North Korean assimilation website. Did you guys check that out? It was great. It was like, I don't think there was any alternate reality game associated with it or anything, but It was very cool. Like, the marketing for this tape was pretty good.
Yeah, that's what's really surprised me, is that, like, THQ has really upped the ante in terms of video game. Or, like, I mean, because that was always the problem with, like, Frontlines. They've never been able to get to that, like, I won't say EA, because they're huge, or Activision, but they've never even, if, I don't know. They're sort of a third rate. They've not gotten up to, like, a Square Enix level even yet, but I think that there's potential here. Homefront, we'll see. We'll see how it turns out. The reviews aren't great. The shareholders are nervous, but 375,000 copies speaks for itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that bothers me, though. I mean, think about just how much weight then is on this Metacritic score. Like, I think that kind of bothers me. Just like, you know, I think everyone just loses their shit over the Metacritic score. Gotta get my Metacritic score up. You know, Metacritic or 80 above, you're okay. Below 80, you're dead. And just, yeah, you think about what Metacritic is. It's what 10 to 20 fat dudes writing on websites have to say about you.
Yeah, seriously. That's, you know, we've talked about this before, that I really, that all of us really have a problem with the games review and, you know, just, I don't want to say industry, but, like, you know, just how games are reviews makes no sense to me. I mean, it's we only use, like, these four numbers, really. And, you know, the fact that that can take a company's entire stock down 21% in a fucking day, like, ugh.
Think about it, though. I mean, think about, like, you know, just, like, the fucking power boner that people, like, I don't know, like Jeff Gerstmann, for instance, you know, must have over making these reviews. Well, like, look, if I give this game a shitty score, their stock might go down by 20%.
You forget that while he might have a fat class 5 chub, four of those classes are cookies.
But I mean,
because he's
think about
fat.
If we shit on a game in this podcast, and that caused that game's company's stock to drop by 20%.
Well, you're trying to say that Giant Bomb alone, or any of the other big websites.
Metacritic obviously is the aggregate of, or the average of all these, you know, website reviews. But I mean, think about it. I mean, you know, 20 reviewers can all give a game a 7, and that game's stock goes down 20%.
It's true. I mean, they do wield power, but I think that in a case like this, they wield more power than normally. Like, if EA were to release Dead Space 2 and it got a 7, they're not going to take a 21% stock hit, right? I think this is a special case because it comes from kind of a third-rate publisher on a new IP. People aren't so sure of it, and the first sign of trouble, people are out.
Yeah. I guess in that sense, it's, you know, Just the risk, you know, the risk averse nature of a lot of these AAA games. Yeah. Like, if you come in with this new IP,
this,
like,
is, this is how a hit based
industry
Metacritic
works. Score. But I mean, still, just like the, I don't know, the concept of it is just so retarded. It's like, it's like saying that your stocks are going down one, you know, like go down a dollar for every dick that Zero Punctuation puts in his video about you. It's like, I don't know. It seems so fickle.
No, I agree with what you're saying, but I think William's right. I mean, it is a hit-based industry, and are you? I mean, if I was investing in THQ, which honestly I would have put some money into THQ, but on seeing these scores, I would have sold the stock. I would have. That would have been that's a smart move to do.
You know, it's a smart move is if you had bought THQ stock at about 3 p.m.
Shut
today.
Up! I'm so poor. Quit reminding me of the money I could have made.
Yeah, 3 p.m. today. If you had bought that stock, look, THQ is going to be around. They may have to restructure something. But, I mean, this thing got down to, like, I don't even know. Is that dollars?
Dude, I'm serious.
It's like
why?
It's like $2 or something. Buy that shit up. I mean, they'll be around.
Look,
they'll
make
another good game.
Look, we talked about this before. Why are we not in game investing? Like,
yeah, we should just make a security, right? A game design or a game-based security that, you know, we invest in lots of games that we think are going to be good, the companies that make them, and we just make a shitload of money.
And then we pull out when we see Metacritic scores. That's it. You're a millionaire.
Because I could have told you that game was going to be bad.
I mean, it has potential. And, you know, I think that people, this is another phenomenon I've always thought of. We talked about this, Dance Dance Revolution. That game's sort of a static, right? It's a flat line. It's not really going to be any better or worse than it's ever been. They add new features to it every year, but it's sort of the same thing over and over. And people will review Dance Dance Revolution, give it, oh, three. Oh, two. It's the same bullshit. But it's like, it's not, I think that, okay, but I guess a better example would be Sega. Anything that Sega publishes just gets sort of auto-shitted on by the games review industry. That game, Viking, fantastic game. I mean, maybe not game of the year, maybe not, but it was a solid game that had some really cool mechanics in it, some really cool ideas, but you'll be hard-pressed to find a review over, like, 8.1. Because it comes from a second-rate publisher, from a little-known developer, and so it doesn't carry the clout that, oh, but fucking Madden comes out every year. Oh, 10 out of 10, Madden, I love it. Oh, fucking EA, whatever, Dead Space 2, 10 out of 10.
Wow, Blake is bitter. You know, I think you like Sega about as much as I like Apple.
No. It's not just Sega. My point, or we talked about this just a few weeks ago, Namco Bandai put out, what is it, Forsaken, or, God, I love that game. No, what's the other one? Enslaved, that's it. Remember, Enslaved came out. We talked about how it was such a great game. Everybody gave it sevens because it comes from a second-rate publisher, and, you know, the marketing behind it is limited, and these reviewers don't care. They're like, ah, yeah, whatever, seven. Sounds good.
I mean, here's the thing, too. I mean, obviously, with the whole, you know, I mean, going back a bit to the whole giant bomb scam. I mean, the giant bomb Jeff Gerstmann GameSpot scandal.
Wait, back up. Explain what that is to our listeners.
So, this was when Jeff Gerstmann was writing for GameSpot and did a review of Kane and Lynch and shit.
For the record, he is overweight. I just wanted to throw that out there.
So, he shit on Kane and Lynch and then promptly got fired. Apparently, according to this scandal, obviously, the publisher wanted to get a good review, and supposedly they, you know, gave, you know, sponsored GameSpot,
had a lot of ads,
you know, full page ads and shit, and then Jeff Gerstmann shit on the game and was fired.
Now, at the same time, there are probably less than three people in the world who know the truth of what actually happened. My problem with this scandal is that people are like, oh, yeah, Jeff Gerstmann's totally right. Oh, he totally should have left there. But it's like, you don't really know. You don't. Maybe he was molesting children or something at Giant Bomb. All right, GameStop. You don't know. All right. My point is, a very few number of people know the truth behind this scandal. So don't jump on one side or the other. You know,
I don't see how you can say that about this, which is pretty black and white. And then about everything else, you were the most opinionated son of a bitch I've ever seen in my whole life.
No, because, oh my God, I listen to facts and I make judgment on them. If I don't have the fucking facts, I'm not going to make the judgment. It's called being an adult. Welcome to adult. You get the facts and you decide on the facts. You don't get the hearsay. You don't get the speculation and decide on speculation. No one actually knows what happened. So all these people who you know,
I mean,
are like,
that's
fuck
true,
GameSpot.
It's not written on paper anywhere, but I mean, you look at what you can see, and you're like, come on. You know, it's one of those things where it's like it's not explicitly stated. But.
Also, nobody came to the defense. You know, like they did not defend this because if they had tried, they would have failed because this is probably what happened. You know, I mean, like Justin Fick said, this is just blatantly obvious that's what happened.
You're so sure, all right? You're so sure.
And you're right, Blake. I'm not 100% sure. We shouldn't like, you know, immediately take the side.
A friend of mine, you know, it's just like a belief in God, right? Now, here getting a little esoteric here. A friend of mine is so sure there's no God, like atheist times 1,000. And I say to her, I'm like, but you're so sure there's not. You're so sure. You don't know. You can't like all the way. You know, like none of us know at the end of the goddamn day, right? And it's just like this scandal. None of us really know what happened there. Very few people really know what happened. So what's the point in speculating on it?
Well, regardless of whether or not there is written proof of this out there,
God is
you must
dead.
At least acknowledge the possibility of this being the case. and therefore acknowledging the possibility that these Metacritic scores are for sale.
Sure, of course I did. Essentially. Of course.
Yeah, you know, Blake, you ever heard of the Occam's razor?
All right. Oh, so come on. Here we go. Fucking, yeah, I saw contact.
Most,
all right.
The simplest answer is most likely the truth. It is not always the case. It's not always the case, but we're just applying.
But that's,
you know,
not always the truth, William
here.
Miller.
I mean, based
come
on,
where's the scientist?
So far, this is the conclusions we're coming to. Look, we've gotten way, way off topic about this.
Earth is flat.
Blake Done. Is dumb and God is dead. Let's move on.
Well, very, very quickly, Blake Buck. I think you should look into the Flat Earth Society.
Dragon
Age T-shirts.
Oh.
Also, I think the Holocaust deniers would open. Would
I
open
am.
Their arms
I
want to
be
you.
A goddamn yearly member. absolutely. Just because I seen Schindler's List, don't mean that shit exists. Put that in a rap song, Jay-Z. Dragon Age launches on Facebook. BioWare and EA open a free-to-play browser-based game to all members of the social networking site. Offer Dragon Age 2 in-game items for completing Facebook quests. Now, this is sort of new territory for a lot of publishers out there. They have their, you know, franchise, their AAA franchise, and now they're sort of building up momentum for it with a Facebook social network connected game. What do you guys think of this?
I think it's really cool. I think it's very cool.
Now, is this a real honest to God, like, you know, good tie-in, or is this like, we have Dragon Age, we heard Facebook makes a lot of money, make us Dragon
I've
Age
heard
Facebook.
That the game is honestly really good. It fits the Facebook platform. It plays very well. I think Soren Johnson designed it. He was a designer on Spore. Didn't really do a good job on that, but he designed Civilization IV. Good designer. He's been, you know, studying the social space for a while. He did a lot of little experiments that he released to a limited audience for a while, and they were really fun. And I think this was his first foray into the space, and he did a really good job. And so you have a good Facebook game and a pretty good console game, and they're talking to each other, and that is very, very cool. I like that.
In the game, players can enlist the aid of their Facebook friends to work through the storylines worth of quest upgrade characters and build their kingdoms. As an added incentive for fans of the franchise, players can earn exclusive unlockable items in Dragon Age 2 by completing specific quests in Dragon Age Legends. In 2009, publisher EA acquired Facebook developer Playfish for how much money? let's play a guessing game. How much money did they pay for Playfish? Because Playfish made they made Fishville, I think. Didn't they make Fishville? They also
no. Fishville is Zynga.
Are they? Oh no. They made a Pet Society, right? Am I making that up?
I was gonna go ahead and say 200 million.
275. Not far off. So, I mean, this seems like a smart idea, even though I deep down kind of hate it. I mean, it seems like it builds support for the game. Players enjoy it. Why not?
I don't know, man. The thing is, like, I go on these Facebook games, and it's like I've played a couple, and it just feels like at all times, like, whenever I'm playing these Facebook games, it's the same feeling I get when I'm standing in a used car lot. Like, I don't know, it just feels like I'm constantly being sold something. Like, I always gotta be, you know, looking over my shoulder for the used car salesman.
Yeah, they made Restaurant City, Pet Society, and something called Who Has the Biggest Brain? Gangster City, Poker Rivals. So they've got quite a bit of social gaming clout under them. William Miller, what do you think? Is this a good marketing ploy or the devil?
I don't think it's a ploy at all. I mean, I think if it were a bad game, then it's the devil. Then it's like, you know, then it's just this half-assed foray into a social media network, only looking at it as a way to advertise for something bigger. But what they did is they took a real game designer and gave him the opportunity to work on a cool IP, but in a totally different, with a totally different set of constraints. And they came out with something that's cool, and I love it.
Wee Miller, you got any more? Justin Vick, you guys got any more news for us?
I got one more. Very recently, Ubisoft has unveiled their guitar rhythm game. So this is going to be called Rocksmith. Uh-oh. And it features 45 songs from bands like the Rolling Stones, the Animals, David Bowie, and Nirvana. And it will have songs not available in Rock Band or Guitar Hero franchises.
I like how that's like part of the press release.
Yeah, we got different songs.
We got different songs.
Please come by.
This is our innovation. This is our bullet point.
So wait, now is this? I mean, it seems like at this point it's almost pointless to try and compete with Rock Band or Guitar Hero because like there's that whole the whole market is shrank, and it seems like by this point you're either in one camp or the other. Or hell, there's not even going to be another Guitar Hero, right?
That's right. And I think even Rock Band is on hiatus. I mean, yeah, I think they're going to put out new content packs for it, but I don't think they're working on a new one.
It seems really dumb to release a new guitar-based rock game in 2011.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're going right up against the pro guitar of Rock Band 3. So I mean, it sports a real stringed guitar controller, which has an input jack that. And you can, I guess you can plug in most electric guitars into your 360 or PlayStation.
Now see, just from, I hear these things about plugging your guitar and playing jam out in the game. I'll believe it when I see it. I would imagine the technology and just sheer, amount of, I don't even know what kind of technology that is. Acoustic detection system or something.
Yeah,
it seems impossible to do consistently well.
Well, the Rock Band one has, it has like special frets, and that's how it's not doing any signal processing or anything. I think it's just seeing has these special frets that see where your fingers are. But maybe this is different.
Well, the one they have out now, the guitar they have out now, is just like there's 100 buttons on it, right, instead of the traditional 5. But supposedly soon, or maybe already, they're supposed to come out with a stringed guitar you can play, and it will detect in the game. Now I don't know if this is out yet or how well it works, but. It seems like it's going to be shaky at best in terms of responsiveness.
I would love to try it, honestly. But I mean, this other one is just, I don't know. At this point, it's just like, why bother?
That's true. So go buy that, I guess, if you're just, who's like, man, playing rock games on my Xbox? Crazy. Let's.
I just don't have enough guitar games on my game system.
Seriously, like you just buy a goddamn guitar. Like they're innovating their way out of a job is what they're doing. I mean, eventually they're just going to sell you a guitar. No, it's not even going to connect to anything.
It's the same reason I hate DJ Hero. Like, okay, DJ Hero costs $120 for the game and the controller. Ableton Live Intro costs $99, and you couldn't be a real DJ with that. I have been for fucking years. So William Miller, you got anything else for us?
Well, I think we were going to lead into a discussion here, if we've got time for it. We'll say this briefly, because we have some feedback to get to and all that. So there's a big earthquake in Japan. Like in William Miller's head, the whole continent just cracked in half. Like you imagine the silhouette, it's got a big crack in it right now. It's real bad over there. This has affected the games industry in Japan, obviously. I mean, a huge swath of the country was physically affected. Their power outages and flooding and all kinds of crazy shit.
Reactor cooling rods, fire, radiation.
Right. Their reactors are about to have a meltdown, orders of magnitude worse than Three Mile Island. It's really terrible and all that. So
and
first
all
things
that
go down. And all that. So the first casualty, games casualty in this terrible tragedy was Final Fantasy MMO servers are suspended until further notice.
Oh no!
Do people still play that?
I think like five.
No, this
people
is no. This is Final Fantasy 14. 14.
No, both of them. 11
oh, both.
And 14.
11 and
so,
14.
Excuse me, 10 people are affected by this.
yeah, I was going to say, see previous statement.
Now, wait, you're trying to, now, I bet, now, I don't know about their subscriber numbers, but I would imagine in Japan, Final Fantasy 14 is probably doing pretty well.
It's
I mean,
okay.
It's certainly not near as well as like Warcraft in America.
It's not nearly as good as 11 was because it's a bad game. Anyway, we're not going to get into that. So they go down. All 10 of those people were not available for comment, unfortunately. Also, Tokyo developer Irem, I-R-E-M, was working on a game called Disaster
Report 4. Disaster Report 4. I'm really, really sad that I'll go ahead and steal your thunder. They canceled Disaster Report 4 because in it, there's a giant earthquake in Tokyo. Whoops. But, dude, even before this all happened, I saw some screenshots of Disaster Report 4. Looks like a very, very good game. I was very impressed.
It did.
And it really saddens me that I guess this happened and you have to cancel it. Who's going to want to go and buy an earthquake game, you know, just a few scant months after, you know, thousands of people died in a Japanese earthquake? But it looked really, really good, and I'm really sad that they canceled it.
Yeah, that's too bad. Also, MotorStorm 3 Apocalypse and Yakuza of the End, both of which have apocalypse themes, were also delayed or canceled. So we're not really sure what the fate of those two games is, but they ain't coming out anytime soon.
Man.
So
I guess you got to.
I mean, it must, like, that is the apocalypse going on over there. So, you know, this is a little bit insensitive to release MotorStorm 3 Apocalypse while the earth is cracking open and hell is pouring out.
Diablo. They are living Diablo right now over there.
That's what somebody needs to do. They need to go into a church, open the basement, and go all the way down to hell and kill the devil. That'll fix all this. Also, Capcom delayed Marvel vs. Capcom 3's character DLC. And I guess that's just because... I don't know. I don't think the characters were insensitive to the situation, but I think logistically, they were not able to. Technology wise. I got this when we were at PAX. This whole thing went down when we were at PAX, and Nikki got this email from Zynga Japan, right? And it shows Zynga Japan. They're working still, but they're under their desks. They're just like working, but underneath their desks. Those guys are committed. I tell you what. Anyway, so, you know, I feel real bad for all the developers out there in Japan, and I really hope that, you know, I heard all this stuff about the automobile industry and how, you know, all of the supply chains for these automobiles are disrupted, and people, you know, may have this period where they're not able to get any Japanese made cars, so they buy domestic or they buy from somewhere else. And it's talking about how these companies are going to lose a lot of their customer base because of this point or this period, this long period, perhaps, where they just won't be able to get any Japanese products. And I really hope that the games industry doesn't suffer quite so much from
that.
Yeah,
and it's sort of, and I think about this, you know, would it be possible? You know, at the same time, perhaps as terrible as this is, could you not, I mean, let's say you made Disaster Report 4, because it was scheduled to ship out in April, less than a month from now. The game's basically done. You know, what if you just renamed it Tsunami Disaster and sold it to Western markets? You know, I guess that's opportunistic, but at the same time, it's not like we meant to do this. And is it terrible for us to want to make money? I guess it is terrible. But it looked like a good game.
I don't think that they believe they're going to make any money. That would be analogous to somebody releasing, you know,
9/11 the game.
Right. Or just like releasing 9/11 the game, but calling it something else. You know, plane hit China Tower or something. I don't know.
They were already making the game, I guess.
Rampage New York City Edition.
Well, oh well, that's how, you know what, if you live in a country that has a lot of earthquakes, don't make an earthquake game. You better get that shit out quick, son. Alright, it's time for releases. Alright, first up on the releases list, we've got Dissidia 012, Durosium Final Fantasy.
Is that the fighting tape? Is that the fighting game?
This is right at William Miller's alley.
Yeah, did you guys ever play the first Dissidia?
I did not. Tell us about it.
I'm asking you guys. I haven't played it either.
Apparently, it's like a Final Fantasy sort of mashup. I don't think it's a fighting game. You're thinking of Inner Guys way back in the day.
No, this is a fighting game. I remember because Muhammad got this game on his PSP, and he played it a lot. He seemed to like it. I'm not a big fighting game player, so I probably wouldn't like it.
Well, yeah, it mashes up all sort of different Final Fantasy games. You see characters from 10 and 2. I mean, look, here, I'm going to send you a screenshot, William Miller. This game is right up your alley.
Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, the first one took, I think, the first 10 Final Fantasy games and took the main protagonist and antagonist, and they are each a character.
I mean, just look at this fucking screenshot.
Actually, I did look a little bit at the Dissidia on PSP over Muhammad's shoulder while he was playing it, and like, I never saw any gameplay. The whole game was like these damn cutscenes with these crazy characters.
Well, hey, that's Japanese, you know.
Like, is that a
story progression?
Is that a
for
woman?
You?
I can't tell.
Those, you know, who knows?
I mean, I could tell the one on the left because she has breasts, but that, those could be small breasts.
That's
on this other
that's what's his
here.
Name from Final Fantasy? No, 10. No, 12. He's 12.
His name is Vaughn from Final Fantasy 12. It is a dude, but. Technically.
Yeah, just Google him. You know, jerk off if you want. You know, who knows? Is he man, woman? Who knows? Also, we got Assassin's Creed Brotherhood coming out on PC this week. Ezio returns to an epic struggle of the powerful Templar Order and Assassin's Creed. Blah, blah, blah. Just Vic, what else we got?
All right, we got Crysis 2 for Xbox 360 and PS3. So your Cry Engine is coming to melt your consoles.
Oh boy.
We got The Sims Medieval for the Mac.
Wait, now has anybody played Crysis 2? I played the demo. I wasn't that impressed. Does anybody say anything beyond that?
As far as I'm concerned, it's a really nice tech demo. It's really? It's basically a way to measure your computer's cock.
One of the things I saw at GDC was that, like, Crysis, people behind Crysis have been making a version of Crytek, the engine behind Crysis, for the film industry. Like, you could just use this thing to make movies with, not even games.
Huh.
And it's like, I don't know if it's specifically for pre-visualization or if it's actually supposed to be like...
At the same time, if your graphics are fairly simple, why not? You know, if you don't need to render, you know, human-like people. If you let's say you need a truck driving down the street from
a
distance.
That's what they had. Totally, they had a truck or some landscape. And I think this comes back to my whole, like, theory. I think within 5 to 10 years, like, game technology will just obliterate offline rendering technology that we use in film. I think we'll get there. Like, waiting for your film to render is going to be obsolete. You'll just be able to, like, or it will dramatically be sped. I mean, it's stupid to say that won't go away.
I think these two industries will come together, but there's not, you will always have this sort of, it's the high end that, you know, you'll always have server farms for these movies because, you know, there's always going to be that desire for the ultimate fidelity that games aren't going to be able to provide.
I think the technology is closer to converging than you think. That's what I think.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if that's like the recognizable budget movie sort of fingerprint is seeing like you know Crytek rendering in there. Like it'll be obvious. Like all the low budget movies will use it.
But the thing about it is, like, did you see the new Unreal demo, the tech demo that they did at GDC and PAX?
No, I haven't.
It is hot. Like it looks like a, you know.
Wait,
is
that that film noir looking?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. I did see that actually.
It's so hot. And like the kinds of stuff that they can do now real time, things like subsurface scattering and multiple light bounce and the, you know, realistic reflection and depth of field. Like, this is the kind of stuff that we used to this is why we used to render things offline, and now we can do it in real time. And I just think that there are going to be fewer and fewer reasons to render movies like that anymore. Plus, you know, the asset creation process.
There's always going to be that, but we're always chasing the dragon of the ultimate fidelity. You forget that.
Now, I agree, but think about like a movie like Up, right? You could do Up in real time. You could do Cars in real time. You could do all of these. I'm not saying like you couldn't do Avatar maybe, but you could get pretty damn close. I just think that, you know, it'll converge. The asset creation process for movies and for games is identical now. You know, you do the same kind of high poly modeling. You do the same high fidelity animation and motion capture. You do the same high res texture creation. It's all the same except for one renders offline and one doesn't. I think that'll go away.
I still think there's going to be two markets, though. I mean, I agree that they're going to come together, but You know, for stuff like Avatar, for the top end, for the Michael Bay, there's always going to be this endless, you know, the valley.
Uncanny Valley.
The Uncanny Valley will always provide,
Oh, I agree. I agree with that. But I think you could do Transformers in Unreal Engine. I think you could do that. It would look just fine. If you took Transformers and you rendered all the CG in the Unreal Engine, it would look almost identical. You add a little film grain to it, you're done. It'll look identical. Mm. I mean, I just don't think...
That's probably
true. There's always going to be the Uncanny Valley, right? When we approach realistic human faces and all that shit. You know, we heard about all that before, but that's why we don't do that in film. If you want to, you know, render trucks or robots or cartoon characters, all that stuff could be
robot
done in real
trucks.
Time. So, I don't know. I was really, really blown away, both with the Crytek tech demo for film and also the new Unreal iteration. That shit is tight, man.
All right, so Justin Fick, what else we got on releases?
Coming up next, we have a gem. It's called The Sims Medieval, coming out for the Mac.
Oh, and PC.
Gotcha. So anyway, it's sure to be on the Tunster Dennis's Inside Mac Games giveaway list.
Oh man, I wonder what he's doing. Can we call up Tunster Dennis? Dude, I should send him an email. Be like, Tunster, next Wednesday. Calling you up, State of Mac Gaming.
Come on our show, yeah. he's on Twitter now.
If he doesn't answer, we're gonna take that.
He's broke.
he's either dead or Mac Gaming is dead. Either one. He's got to represent one of them or both.
Or he caught a sickness from his child.
I don't know, man. I read his Twitter the other day. He's complained about like a crack in like the windshield of his Range Rover. So I think Mac Gaming is doing just fine.
Man, it's really hard to snort coke out of a 5 these days. Ghostbusters Sanctum of Slime on XBLA, PC, and PS3. Sanctum of Slime returns with a top-down action adventure following the star of 2009's Ghostbuster revamp. I looked at some screenshots of this. It looks like kind of a... I won't say Kill Monty, but it's a top-down sort of 8-way shooter with some RPG elements. Looks like it could have some potential. So, you know, maybe if you're into that, check it out. Windmill, you want these last few for us?
I ain't got that link. What are you talking about?
Oh, my God. Dude, it's at the same place every week.
No.
It doesn't move between weeks. Lego Star Wars 3. Coming out for Wii, PC, PS3, Xbox, 360, DS, PSP. Apparently, this is yet another LEGO Star Wars. We had one and two. Now they got three. I thought they already made them of all the movies. How can they possibly make another one? We already seen it.
I guess this would be the Clone Wars itself, which was, what, between two and three?
I guess...
Chronologically? I don't know. I remember the cartoon was good.
So you got it. There's releases. It's time for feedback. All right, guys. First up, let me pull up my email. One second here. All right. For feedback, we got a photo from Superderp on the forums. It says, Blake, it is you, in all caps. And it's he's attached a photo. So here, you guys ready? Open up the photo in 3, 2, 1, go.
First of all, okay, well, let's describe what we're seeing here. I see a woman, a largish woman with a killer mullet, a square face, camo shorts, and a beer bottle.
And it looks like her breasts are around her hips. Like they're just a couple of inches above the hips.
And she's sitting on a train.
I hope that he actually took this photograph and didn't just find it online. Oh, that is, I want to marry that.
Super Derp, if you took this photo, we should give this man some battle points.
Oh, he's just going to claim he did now. Great work, Justin Fick.
Well, a million battle points either way.
The next email we got is from Wild Penis. He also sent us a feedback. He also sent us just a picture. This one, I'll just describe it to you guys. It says, feed me your soul in cryptic writing, and then it's got the Blake Buck... face.jpg with like vomit or blood or smoke or something coming out of my mouth. Here, I'll tell you what, I'll stick it in the Dropbox for you guys and you can observe it. It feels like something that I don't know, like what's it, what's a dude from Saw? What's that guy's name?
Jigsaw, isn't that his name?
Feels like Jigsaw made this. It's terrifying to look at.
It is pretty terrifying.
You know, it's, that's all our emails, but we have a lot of voicemails, strangely, this week. Less email, more voicemails. So our first voicemail, I'll just play these in order that we got them. Here we go.
Hey guys, this is Sudo Sushi, admin and demigod of the forums and the internet. I'd just like to get all you lurking monglers out there to sign up for the forum. Now, I have to warn you, there are a lot of dick pictures on the forum, and I'm not even going to count Blake Buck's avatar. But we've got a lot of good content on there for in between the show's releases. And if you ever want anything, a feature or anything, just hit me up on Twitter or send me a private message on the forums.
I want a feature that makes me money.
So, yeah, go sign up to the forums. I strongly urge you to. Now, before I go, Blake Buck, you always butcher my name. It's Sudo Sushi.
Is that not what I say? Sudo Sushi. Is that not his name? Am I making that up wrong?
Sometimes you bobble it a little bit.
Not Sludo Slushy, however you butcher it each week. Now, get it right, or you have a class 6 chub up your ass. Anyway, I'm off to go drink and sleep with some women. Peace.
I like how anyone involved in this show, when they're not on the show, they are fucking or drinking.
Good evening, gentlemen. Sudo Sushi again. I've been wondering why we seem to get the same bunch of people sending feedback to the listening line. TK, Americans, drunk TK, drunk Americans.
I like how TK and drunk TK are different people.
They're two different people.
Oh, don't worry. We got 3 minutes and 34 seconds of voicemails left. Don't you worry.
And the thought crossed my mind that some people may think it's harder for them if they live outside of the U.S., I just wanted to let people know that it's a lot easier than you think, no matter where you live in the world. First, go get Skype and fill in the contact information. You can even use a fake email address, although I don't condone that, but you can do whatever you want. And Skype will give you a free call to anyone, anywhere, at any time. You can use that to call +1-845-228-8539. That's +1-845-BATTLE-9.
And by the way, just to add to this, if you're on Skype, you can also just call, if you have Skype and you have a microphone, you can just call, you can just do Best Damn Podcast Ever is our Skype name. And if you call us when we're not online, you will get the voicemail and I'll be able to hear it just the same. In fact, probably much better quality. So if you don't want, if you're a UK listener and you don't want to have to pay the money to call 845-BATTLE-9, go on Skype, Best Damn Podcast Ever is the username. Give us a call, and you can do it that way.
Alternatively, you could always send in a nice, clear MP3. It makes it easier for our fantastic new editor, Craig Reed, to slip it into the podcast like you would slip into a beautiful woman. Anyway, thanks for the show, guys. Blake, dumb.
No! You asshole! You know, and by the way, we do have to give props to Craig Reed. I'll do it again at the end of the show. But Craig Reed, you know, I've been so goddamn busy lately. Craig Reed stepped up. We had a battle between him and TK. TK just fucking failed and didn't make anything. I said, you guys both edit this show. Whoever does it better is the winner. TK did nothing. TK very disappointed in you.
I got to take credit for this, too. Blake Buck called me up. And he's in a tizzy. He's like, William Miller, both of these people want to do the show, edit the show. And I don't know which one to pick. And he's crying and shit. I don't know. And so I said, Blake, just make them battle. And they did. And it was good. We got the right one, I think.
All right, next voicemail.
Hi, this is Media Cat. I'm calling from England, so this is going to cost me like a bajillion dollars or whatever you use over there. So you better play this on the show, Blake. You're fat. You're fat. You are fat.
I like how it cost him $1 billion, apparently, and all he wanted to say was that I'm fat.
Worth it. Worth every penny.
Hey, BDP, it's TK with Trents again.
This officially begins our new section. He asked us a question here, so let's go ahead and start our new section, BDPE Answers. All right, it's time for BDP Answers. We got TK on the voicemail. What's up, dude?
Another question about making games and such. Should you, if you want to make games in the future, should you join a company that makes games and then, you know, work there for a while and then make your own shit? Or should you just fly with your ideas and just try to move on that? Or should you just, like, try to pick up some skills in the industry first?
Well, okay, so his question was, if you want to make games, should you go out and do an independent game sort of studio, try and start on your own, or work in the games industry for a while and then start your own company? Go.
I would say go indie. Go completely indie. I mean, there are so many venues now that are open to indies that have low barriers to entry, like things like the App Store, things like, you know, Xbox Live indie games, and then, you know, going up from there, you have WiiWare, and then at the very top, you have things like, you know, the PSN and XBLA, you know, but I don't know. It just seems like there is so much more creativity and so much more freedom in that space. I mean, if you're looking to make money, I mean, I guess it's a lot steeper of a climb. But I don't know. Like if you're still in school, if you're in college or something, like there's no reason not to jump into the indie space with everything you got.
I'll agree with Justin Fick. I think that indie games are awesome. You know that like Justice said, really creative space, good place to work. But you know, there's something to be said for the professional arena, right? If you work at a studio, especially if you've just come out of college, I can't tell you how much you're going to learn just in your first 6 months working in a real studio with people that really know what the fuck they're doing. Also, you know, you're not going to get into that studio in the first place if you're not doing stuff on the side anyway. So I would say you need to do both. You know, get out there, make your games, you know, hone your skills, and then see if you can't get into one of these studios that are making, you know, larger games to gain that experience. Plus, it opens up this huge network of people. Like, you can go to a place like PAX, and instead of being, just an observer, all of a sudden you're invited to all these parties, you know all these people, you can network and shit. It just makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, like, my resume, I guess, to get into the industry was my game. Like, no one at Petroglyph, no one really gave a shit about my resume. It was the fact that I had made a published game. You know, it's like, if you want to get into the industry proper, having a game is the number one way to do it.
27,758.4071. That's the number of days you have in your life, according to the average life expectancy in the U.S. 27,758. Balls out, indie game publisher. Come on, dude. Risk it all or don't. You got to live big or die hard. All right.
Blake and I have had this conversation before.
We've had this conversation before, William Miller. I'm all about big risks and big failures.
Yeah, I know you are.
Because look at my life right now. It's basically a big failure.
Blake doesn't have a lot to lose, though. So, you know, the working in the industry proper does provide you with some financial security. Not a lot, though. I mean, like...
Sure, and financial complacency, son. I mean, come on. I mean,
Blake Buck has a point.
Part of being in the indie game scene is like you got to scrap for every dollar. You got to fight for it. And that you can't just say, like, I'm going to go into work today and enjoy my job. You got to get out there and fight and put out. And that's what it is to be an artist. Steve Jobs, great artist ship.
Oh my God! So, but it's not as simple as you think. Take Notch, all right? Made arguably the most played indie game of all time.
Oh, you know, whoa, all time!
Certainly the most popular one right now.
Recently, yeah, let's say recently.
Incredibly successful indie developer. That guy developed that game in his spare time while working somewhere else. He didn't just like give up everything he was doing and go make the game. He didn't do that. And he said to his company, like, he only left his company when he knew the game was going to succeed. He did not take a huge risk personally and financially to make that game. He did it smart. Right, he worked on it in his spare time. He saw it was something gold, And that is when he took the risk. It was a calculated risk. You have to be calculated about these things, or you'll end up living in a shack like Blake Buck. So I think
my life's more fulfilling than yours.
The indie scene is awesome, okay? But the professional scene can be just as rewarding. Like, I love working on my game. I'm really excited about the game I'm doing at my job. I love it. And also, I have side projects that I'm working on too, and I get a lot of gratification out of that. And that works for me. Some people do it differently, but it works for me. And like I said, the contacts you make, the exposure you get to the parts of the industry that you're just not going to see if you're an entry-level indie, it's worth a lot, just that.
Well, take it from me, the least financially successful person I know. Balls out, let's do this. PlayStation 2, go, activate. Make your game. All right, next question.
Hey, it's TK again. I got a friend here who got a question for PDP Answer, and he want to know what programming language you should look into, from ourselves, future, from the program. What's the best language, in the future? What should you pick up? What's the best?
All right.
So the question is, what is the best programming language to learn for the future?
I guess for the budding developer.
What's the best programming language? Yeah, for the budding developer. Again, this all comes back to what you want to do. If you want to be an indie and you want to make little web games, or you want to make, games that on the iPhone or whatever, you could probably get away with Flash or C# or something like that. If you want to be a professional game programmer, listen up, children. C++. That's your go-to language. Everything is written in that, no exceptions. Unless you're going to be like a tools guy, got to learn the C++. And it makes you a better programmer. Like, learn that shit. It's hard, yeah, but it'll make you a better coder.
Yeah, I think if after going into the indie space, I mean, it really is dictated by what platforms you want to reach. So if you are getting into, for instance, in my opinion, the easiest one to get into being the iPhone, iPad, the whole iOS, you're looking at, C, C++, Objective-C. If you want to be cross-platform, iPhone and Mac and PC and everything, you're looking at C++. William Miller's right. You literally cannot go wrong with C++. It is one of the probably easiest languages to shoot yourself in the foot with, but it's also one of the most powerful and the most cross-platform language you will have access to.
Absolutely. A C++ is like Latin. If you learn Latin, you can learn all the Romance languages easily. So if you learn C++, every other language is a piece of cake. So if you learn that first, all of them, it doesn't matter what it is, unless it's like some crazy functional language, but you're not going to write games in that anyway. But if you learn C++, like, learn an action script, that's 4 hours in some documentation, and you got it. And that's it. So definitely C++.
27,758 days.
You will spend all of them learning C++.
Get on it. All right, who we got next?
Also, one last note about this. Being a programmer, being a good programmer is all about not being a pussy. Okay? So a lot of like script kiddies out there, they'll get on their Flash and they'll drink that Flash Kool-Aid, all of it. Right. And they'll be like, oh, I can do anything in this. And if I can't do it in this, it's not worth doing. And, like a lot of Flash guys like, oh, Flash doesn't support 3D. I don't need to do 3D. Like, that's stupid. OK, if you can't do something just because you don't know the language to do it in, then you fucked up. All right. Man up. Learn your C++.
Well, the converse to that, though, however, is a lot of creativity happens by working within constraints.
That's true.
I mean, I think a lot of clever, innovative Flash games came out just because of the things that Flash can't do.
I'll agree with that. Constraints are a good thing.
It's a genre fiction versus literature, basically.
Yeah,
right?
I think you're right, but at the same time, like, you need the tools. The platform constraints are one thing, but if you don't have the tools to do the job, then you're not going to make it. and you're going to be limited to, you know, you make your really innovative Flash 2D game. What's next? Now all you can do is make your Flash 2D games. You know, you can't move on to anything else because you don't know the damn, you know.
Oh my God, enough nerd talk. Next question.
A good start.
Hey guys, it's TK. Once again, I'm drunk. But I won't leave you a silly voicemail. I'll leave you voicemail for BDP answers. And my question is there like a guide to make a new game? Because I have a game, but I can't come up with any other games. I have a game idea. I can't come up with any other games. And I was like, is there any guide you could come up with, like a 5 or 10 step guide to come up with a new game? Just, you know, any tips. Because the game I have now is just like pretty much an accident that I came up with it. So, you know, if you have any like ideas how I could make another accident turn out to an awesome idea. Thanks.
So I guess the question is, how do you design innovative games? I guess, is that the question?
How do you come up with game ideas?
Yeah, I guess how do you come up with ideas? Like a 5 or a 10 step guide. Honestly, I can give you a 1 step guide to coming up with new game ideas. Is step 1, go outside and do random shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm serious. Like, you will, you know, the things you will experience and the things that you will see and do, either they will become the basis for games, or it will inspire you to come up with it. You know, like what was it? Miyamoto was inspired to make Zelda by going out and playing in the woods.
Right. Didn't the arches you fly through for Star Fox, he said those came from those like traditional Japanese arches, you know, they have. He was like, I want to make something where you fly through that.
Yeah, it's your peripheral pursuits in life that make you a good game designer. Good game designers are Renaissance men, right? They have interests all over the place. They read a lot. You know, mathematics is fun for them. These are the kinds of things that a game designer is going to dip into when they need to come up with a new idea.
It's just like a good writer, exactly, of fiction or nonfiction or anything. A good writer draws from, you know, a powerful life experience and all the life experience they've had, not just like sitting in an ivory tower writing books
all day.
Right,
so the biggest mistake you can make if you want to be a game designer is to sit in your room and play video games all day, because that's not going to help you.
Well, at the same time, is that not experiencing more, though? I mean, I disagree with that, because I think that knowing what other people are doing, that's like saying, oh, well, I'm a fiction writer, but I refuse to read anyone else's fiction, because that's not going to make me learn.
No, I agree. Listen, I agree. But I think that has a radically disproportionate effect on the inspiration for games. I mean, it certainly has an effect on how you craft the game, right? Because you want to see how other people have approached similar problems. And you want to be literate in the language of video games as it is currently and as it was. But I think in terms of coming up with new ideas, nothing compares to, like you said, rich life experience. Read a lot, you know, go out and do cool things.
Top 3 William Miller cool things to go out and do, just for his benefit.
Yes, please tell me. Give me some suggestions for top 5 things I should do.
No, I want you to tell me.
Oh, well, you want me to tell me? Well, I like to travel. Right, I've been all around the world. I like to read a lot. I read a lot of history. I read a lot of sci-fi. I read a lot of fantasy. I read a lot of historical fiction, classics. I love to read. Play board games. You know, that's a source of mechanical inspiration. I think is a good board game. I play music. I mean, this is like you have to be you have to have a wide range of knowledge, but also deep knowledge too.
I mean, there is something to be said too for, I mean, we talked about how playing games maybe isn't the way to go, but I mean, there is something to be said for going back and playing very old games.
Yeah, or the avant-garde, like stuff off the beaten path.
People have said that kind of games have evolved sort of like in, I guess, sort of like a tree, everything coming from things like Space War and Pong and growing out from there. So, I mean, there are many branches of that tree that kind of stopped and no one really explored fully, you know, and you can very easily go back there and find this old game that, was kind of a, I don't know, it was kind of a terminal, a leaf on this tree that no one ever evolved. And there's plenty of old games there that, you know, people, you know, would love to play some evolution of that. You know, maybe it just, maybe something else got really popular at the time and no one bothered to make this type of game anymore or something. But there's a lot of, gold back, you know, through the history of the industry that can, you know, provide tons of
but don't make Bionic Commando. That game, that leaf is dead.
No,
don't
yeah, do that. Don't remake Bionic Commando. That is step two. Step one is go outside. Step two is do not remake Bionic Commando.
My tip for gaining life experience to make games: try being poor for a while. That and banging awful, awful girls. That's basically. All right, we got one more question. It comes from Super Derp. Why does the monkey go so slow in Mario Kart? Because he's big, idiot.
Yeah, because a monkey fucks people up.
He's a tank.
Yeah, what kind of question is this?
Don't waste your question. Look, we only have probably 100 of these that we're going to answer in our lives, all right? Don't waste it on this.
Real shit could have been brought up. What's the balance between socialism and capitalism? That's a real question.
We're not going to answer that now.
Dude, socialism, okay? Socialism is the little skeleton turtle. Okay? Capitalism is the monkey.
I thought you meant you keep stomping on the skeleton turtle and he collapses, but he comes back.
Yep.
One last thing I'm going to say about the game design thing. Here's the difference between a professional game designer and a not professional game designer. And this holds true for all kinds of artists, all right? The artist, the amateur, makes art or makes designs games when he is inspired to. And the professional does it every single day, even if he's not. Even if he's not inspired, he comes into work, he's like, God damn it, I don't want to do this, he still does it. That's the big difference. And to get there, you have to establish a process, like a formalized sort of, this process works for you. This is what I do when I need to get in the zone and make shit work. So I'm putting that out there. Like, a good way to see if you're actually cut out for this or not is try to make a game when you don't want to. And if you can, you know, you're doing pretty good.
Round of applause. All right. Well, I think that does it for this week of the Best Damn Podcast Ever. What do you guys think about that?
That was a damn good show.
It was a long show.
Oh, my God. I think it's one of the longest shows we've ever had. We're at 1 hour and 46 minutes right now. Good God. If you got any feedback for us, it's feedback at bestdamnpodcastever.com. Or call the listener line at 845-BATTLE-9 or just Skype Best Damn Podcast Ever username. In addition, if you have any questions for BDPE answers, send those in. We'll answer those. And anything else, guys? We got anything else? Oh, we got to mention Craig Reed is now editing our shows. Big thanks, a billion battle points for Craig Reed. I'm a busy guy, you know. Being poor all day is tough, you know. I got to have somebody to help me out with that. So, big thanks to Craig Reed, and also Pseudo Sushi in the forums.
There you go. There you go.
I can't. It's just a hard goddamn word. Look, by the end of these, I'm drunk because I've been drinking. also, thanks TK for helping out on the site and all his awful drunk voicemails. Anything else we got to add, guys?
Good to go.
I think that's it.
Well, from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm Justin Fick.
I'm William Miller.
And we'll see you next time.